Did you know Latinos are more impacted by COVID-19 and the flu? Latinos are more likely to be hospitalized from flu symptoms and almost twice as likely to get hospitalized or die from COVID-19. Vaccines can protect you and your loved ones from serious illness, hospitalization, and death. Protecting familia is everything. You play an important role in their decision. Start the conversation with your loved ones. Visit UnidosUS.org to learn more. Paid for with funds from the Centers of Disease Control and Prevention.
In Ecuador's rainforests, a 2,000-year-old unwritten language is connecting cultures. By learning Quechua from the speakers who keep it alive, Brigham Young University students see the world in a new light and strengthen bonds that we have with each other. Brigham Young University, for the benefit of the world.
The Back Nine Boys Golf Show. All about golf, from putting to driving, from hooks to whatever. Now, here's your host of the Back Nine Boys Golf Show, Rich Stiles.
Welcome to the show. The Back Nine Boys Golf Show is brought to you by Bridgestone Golf. Try the Torbee ball today, by the club at Sea Palms, by RSM, proud sponsor of the RSM Classic, giving back to our community, and by Club Car, leader in sport utility and personal vehicles. On the show, we're going to talk with Ben Griffin about playing on the PGA Tour. Ben is a graduate of UNC at Chapel Hill, and we'll also talk with the director of putting at the Sea Island Golf Performance Center, Phil Kenyon, on working with the pros and how he helps them improve, aim better, and putt better. And then we'll talk with Josh Teeter, now back on the PGA Tour after a couple years on the Korn Ferry Tour. And also our guest is going to be Jason Hyland of Club 70 and Sub 70, and we want to talk to him about how he started, why he started. And Jason, welcome to the Back Nine Boys Golf Show.
Well, I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on. Looking forward to the conversation.
I am too. So tell me how you came up with this idea in this highly competitive arena of golf equipment.
Well, I've been fortunate to be in golf all of my life, and I started a golf component company in 1995 when I graduated from college. So I've always kind of done my own thing, and that's still going on. Then we started a second golf company in 08 called Hurricane Golf, where kind of bought large volumes, and I'll use air quotes, from the big names that everyone's kind of heard. And then we'd put it on the internet and sell it, and, you know, we'd buy 1,000 pairs of Puma shoes and then, you know, sell them one at a time. So I've always been around it. But, you know, I've always had this type of building, you know, building Aston Martins, building really high end, everything hand built. And it's like, well, how do you make it different to get into the market? Because you're right, it is so competitive. And those great brands, you know, that have been around forever are great brands for a reason, right? Like they do $1 billion a year in business, and it's a tough arena to compete in.
Right.
But as, like, say, 2014, 15 arenas, you know, direct-to-consumer brands started to change, right? Where it used to be like direct-to-consumer is always just a relatively like an inexpensive alternative, right? And then some of these cooler brands started coming out, Shady Rays for sunglasses, Combatant Gentlemen for suits. And we were starting to see the direct-to-consumer model not just be an inexpensive alternative, but to be a real way of reaching people, controlling your message, and be able to offer a really high quality product at a better price because there's no middle person. So as the market shifted, then I thought, okay, this is the opportunity to build the Aston Martins, where we hand build everything and we can differentiate ourselves by being direct to consumer. So the direct to consumer market for higher end things, Shinola watches, Shinola leather goods, that was the inspiration for Sub 70 Golf. And then we thought that would be a great way to make it different. Also, you know, unique product hand built just for them, but doing it at a better price point.
So did you go to the PGA show and that's where you first introduced it, or did you just work on your own website and for Sub 7?
Yeah, we never went to the PGA show because that's a buyer's show and we were essentially eliminating that market, right?
Gotcha.
We were going direct to consumer. So we never did the PGA show. We just sort of like launched it. And then our big thing was getting it in influencers' hands, right? Because the websites that do product reviews and stuff like that, they need content as well. And we knew we had a good product. And that's why it took, you know, about 3 years to even launch that third company, which was Sub 70, that we knew we had to get the products to work. And it had to be as good as, you know, the premium brands that are out there, if not better. So we knew we had a good product. And then it was kind of an interesting story. So then, you know, we had something that's different. And then the stuff got reviewed very well. And we won a couple of My Golf Spy, you know, where they go and test all the equipment. We came out on top that first year, which was like a huge shot in the arm to the brand that these guys are legit. And Kelkovec here playing it on the Champions Tour without us paying them. And he put some social media post stuff out there. So then that's the momentum that kind of started it. And then it just sort of is, you know, taken off on a trajectory. I couldn't dream this big already. And I feel like we're just getting started, but it's also just been an unbelievably fun ride.
Oh my gosh. Heck yeah. Sounds exciting. Sub 70. So what separates you besides cost from the others?
So we don't do product life cycles. We only do a new product when we really feel that the product is better, right? So we did that from the start. So we're not stuck in every year we're going to bring out a new driver.
Right.
You know, we're only going to bring out what we can see, whatever product category it is. There's a real improvement. I can look somebody in the eye and say, you should buy this one. So sometimes it's 2 years, sometimes it's 4 years. We're not beholden to that. Second, everything is hand-built in Sycamore. Nothing is pre-made. So, you know, if you're a really traditional golf club company, you have the custom shop, as you know. And then if you go to Dick's Sporting Goods and just buy it that day, it's not built in the custom shop. It's built overseas.
Right.
And you have to go through each loft lie to make sure they're perfect, et cetera, et cetera. You know, we can get exact swing weights you want. You want it a quarter inch over with two extra wraps of tape, we can do it. So basically, from being around it my entire life, that's how I build my own clubs, you know, by hand, checking everything, tweaking it. And we wanted to bring how clubs are built for the guys on tour to every person. And that's what makes us a little bit different, that everything is hand built. And like I said, then there's a direct to consumer side of it where, you know, we're not selling to somebody else who has to market up another 40%. And so the price point just naturally better based on efficiency.
Right. And it's been received unbelievably, because I found out about you guys from a fitter in North Carolina where I used to live, a guy by the name of David Bass. And he told me, you got to check out this Sub 70 company. They are really growing, and people that I've recommended them to love them.
Yeah. I mean, it's sort of like we built by, you know, I'm grateful as hell for it, but we have this little community in yeah. Like our best advocates have been, you know, guys like that who, you know, so, you know, very, very kindly and help us out. They tell 10 other guys, and then hopefully those 10 guys get treated well and the clubs perform and it's at a better price and they get exactly what they want. And they tell 10 more guys. So it's been like a combination of new school marketing, direct to consumer, reaching people through the internet, and very much old school, where one golfer tells another golfer. If they see it in the bag, they ask, what's that? So it's kind of, you know, it's new school meets old school, or old school meets new school in the way we're reaching people.
And on your website, give us your website so our listeners can go to it, because I know that would be important for them to check you guys out.
Yeah, sub70.com, and the 70 is just 70. So just sub70.com, and that will pull everything up.
Now, do you have fitting stations where you have at certain areas of the country, or can they actually try and get fitted over the phone, or can they just call you and do it that way?
All of the above. So we do have certain partners that we work with that we trust to work with. So it's usually going to be more of a boutique fitting situation where the gentleman who is fitting you really knows their stuff. We don't want it everywhere, right? We have to have the confidence that fitter is really good. So I think we're in like 13 or 14 states or areas that we have fitters in. And that's on the website where it says you can get fit on the bottom there.
Right.
Also,
right.
We have a demo program where you can demo any of the clubs for $20, essentially. You keep them 2 weeks and try them out. And then also our technical help. We help people on the phone. If somebody still has, you know, no idea what they need, we can walk them through it. Or the other thing you can always do is just get fit locally, because everyone uses the same True Temper shafts, everyone uses the same grips. And if you were fitted in a certain style of Titleist or Srixon head, we have a full product category. So do those guys. And we could say, okay, our equivalent head is the equivalent to this one. It's designed to perform the same way. Sort of like car companies have, you know, sports cars all the way to SUVs. It's right. Like doctor's notes. We can read what's going on. So we even have somebody do that sometime. Hey, spend the $100 and get fit. You'll still save a ton of money by buying our clubs. And we'll be able to understand like doctor's notes of what they put you in and why. If we can't quite help them out over the phone, you know, I'm just getting started. Right. I have no idea. And then we'll hit the pause button. We never want to give a customer, we won't sell somebody just to sell them to make a sale. We want them to play better. And we'll hit the pause button and say, hey, let's go get you fit locally and let's see what's going on here.
Right. Is it important when you're fitting somebody to find out what they've been playing or the clubs that they've liked the best over the last couple of years that they've had?
100%, because they're usually calling you for a reason. Right. So if they have this current set, you know, what's going on with this set? And you're basically in the back of your mind, like you're problem solving, like, well, what issue are they having? And is maybe the clubs that they have, not from a quality issue normally, but maybe it's just not the perfect fit for them. Right. You know, I'm not getting the ball high enough. Well, what shaft do you have? Hold on. Dynamic Gold, that's 300. Okay. Well, you know, I know that's a low spin, low launch shaft. Let's help you out. You know, how old are you? Well, I'm 62. Well, club head speed's probably gone down, right? You can, it's a math equation. So you can usually, in the data, if you ask the right questions, you can usually get a pretty good idea of what's going on. And sometimes too, you know, someone's kept their irons for 10 years and the technology has just changed.
Right.
Yeah. Right. You know,
do you think when you talk with somebody, Jason, that they're, ego is involved when they're telling you about their swing speed?
Well, normally no. I mean, sometimes people think they hit it farther than they do, right? Like they, in the human mind, it's like, well, that's their best drive. But then when I go get, you know, and then I said, well, do you have data? Because a lot of people go to the, you know, simulator stuff. Yeah, hold on, let me pull it up off my phone. I got my driver data. It's 94 miles an hour. Well, it's not averaging 260. Right. So you could sort of find out backwards. I would say mostly it's not about the club head speed. A lot of times people will translate their best shot into their average shot. And then we have so much experience doing this. You try to then back up what they're saying by, well, how fast is it going? And then if he says, yeah, I'm swinging at 102 or 103. Okay. 265 is pretty accurate. Right.
Right.
So you always verify. Right. To make sure, because we don't want to give somebody a bad fit. That's not trying to check somebody's ego, but you just want to make sure when we, you know, when they buy a sub 70 club, that it's perfect for them.
Right.
So we're kind of aware of that a little bit, making sure that they're perfect for the client.
And when you're trying to fit somebody for irons, I know a couple times when I've gone out or talked to some of the instructors that we have here at Sea Island, they kind of say, all right, when you hit your irons, what's happening? Are you hitting thin? Are you hitting heavy? Are you hitting behind the ball? Where's your divot? And honestly, I can tell you that sometimes my divot's behind the ball. So, I mean, I'm not even getting good contact with the ball. Is that a ball position or is that a flaw in what I'm doing? Or both?
Let's just, yeah, more than not. I'd have to look at the golf swing. We have people, somebody, I'd have somebody send me that video. So I would hit the pause button on that one and say, can you video your swing from the back in your chest? And we would look at it and see what's going on. Now, normally on that one, that's not caused by a club, right? Now,
right.
Unless the guy's got the swing looks pretty good and the club looks really long in his hand, and it's hitting the ground behind it. I mean, right? He just doesn't know, right? He might have a real long golf club, but normally, you know, if it's hitting behind the ball, that's more of a golf swing issue. And then with modern technology, this is like the great part that we would just, like in that scenario, I'm almost doing this in my head. I would say, let's stop, send me your golf swing. Let me see what's going on here. You know, yeah. And then me and our pro at sub 70 would probably look at the swing and go, okay, yeah, it's golf swing issue. All right. Then we would set back and go, hey, let's get this fixed first. You know, hey, Kevin, you know a pro in that area? Our pro knows a bunch of people.
Right.
Take a few lessons with this guy. Once we get this fixed, call me back. Gotcha. And then we'll work on clubs, right? Because then if you're trying to go get fit and you're not swinging well, that's not going to be the best outcome either. So that one would probably be a pause button and we go back at it once we got that swing situation figured out.
Yeah, a lot of times it's not the club. It's the club E going through whatever they're doing wrong, and the club's fine, but they're just not getting through it or whatever.
Yeah, golf's hard. Yeah, right? Yeah. Golf's hard. So, you know, exactly. And it's, you know, I mean, the only thing it could be like a club is like, you know, someone's got a tour blade with, you know, a real sharp leading edge and it's digging in. But we would recognize that, you know, what would be it's digging? What kind of club are you playing? You know,
right.
You know, a 1986 Hogan tour blade. What, you know, what's your handicap? 20. Okay. Well, that might be a problem, right? So, but that's rare. Normally it's on that scenario would be a golf swing and we would try to rectify that first.
So since you've been in this for the last few years from Sycamore, Illinois, just outside Chicago, what has been one of the most unusual requests that you've had for sub 70?
At Arizona State University, we offer a wide variety of degree programs online to match all kinds of interests and career aspirations. Programs that are taught by the same notable faculty who teach on campus and designed using innovative technology to improve learning outcomes and equip you for post-graduation success. That's why 87% of ASU online graduates indicated they were promoted at work or received an increase in salary after earning their degree. Find your program at asuonline.asu.edu.
Did you know Latinos are more impacted by COVID-19 and the flu? Latinos are more likely to be hospitalized from flu symptoms and almost twice as likely to get hospitalized or die from COVID-19. Vaccines can protect you and your loved ones from serious illness, hospitalization, and death. Protecting familia is everything. You play an important role in their decision. Start the conversation with your loved ones. Visit UnidosUS.org to learn more. Paid for with funds from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
In the mind of a child with autism, conversation can be overwhelming. But at Brigham Young University, students use an animated social skills coach to help kids like Scout find their strengths and grow in new ways. Brigham Young University, for the benefit of the world.
Gosh, unusual requests. Building golf clubs or a custom set from somebody from a royal family from the Mideast.
Oh my God. That was pretty wild. Really?
Yeah. That was pretty wild. Like,
oh my
I never would have dreamed in a million years we'd get that phone call. Right.
Yeah.
And we did it, and he loves them. And it's like, how cool is that?
Yeah.
So.
Wow.
That's a wild one. I have to think of that one. That one pops up in my mind first of like, the celebrities we get to deal with and athletes, that's always like fun and cool. And I've got to be friends with some of those guys, but that's still the wildest one of getting that request and said, absolutely. You know, Your Highness, we would be happy to help with that. So that was pretty cool.
How cool is that? And then the price is no object and just trying to get it to him as quickly as possible.
He did not get a bill for that one. That's that would be in the VIP club. And if he's playing them, and I won't say who it was, but that would be it's beyond an honor to have that fine gentleman swinging our golf clubs.
You bet it was. All right. Give us the website again.
Sub70.com. So just SUB, then the number 70.com. And my information's on there. You know, I still talk to customers all the time. So, you know, reach out to us. We try to be accessible. We try to make sure we're there to help people. So, yeah, if anyone needs anything, we're always glad to help.
Jason Hyland, Sub70, co-founder, CEO. Thanks for being with us.
Appreciate you having me on.
Hey, it's Alex Urban, the tournament director of the Tour Championship, and you are listening to the Back Nine Boys podcast.
All right, we're talking with Ben Griffin, UNC grad and web.com mini tour player. All right, let's talk. The last time you and I talked, you were going to play in the RSM. How was it playing in the RSM with all these other pros, and here you are being able to play?
Yeah, it was a huge experience, honestly, for me. Kind of playing up in Canada this summer, it was really cool to kind of get used to the scheduling and get used to, you know, 4-round tournaments, 2-round cuts, and kind of, you know, dip my toes in the water to what pro golf was like. And to kind of go ahead and get way ahead of the learning curve and get to play in the RSM was huge. I got to, you know, feel the nerves on the first tee for the first time with, you know, 50 people watching or so. and, you know, got to experience what it was like to, you know, play on the biggest stage in golf. And so it was really cool for me. You know, I played pretty well. I definitely got off to a tough start, but I battled back and put myself in position to make the cut. And unfortunately, didn't work out at the end when I three-putted the last to miss by one. So that one kind of stuck in my mind. I think a lot of players kind of have something like that, some sort of adversity they've battled in their career. And so I think that was huge for me. It kind of motivated me to, you know, try to play really well moving forward and try to, you know, make it back to that stage.
So you're on the last hole of the RSM on Friday to try and make the cut. You're on the green, or you're just off the green. You three putt. Were you thinking about, I got to make this putt to make the cut?
I didn't really know exactly where I stood in terms of the cut line, but I definitely had a feeling, you know, every shot was going to be pretty crucial with where I was on the leaderboard or what my number I was at. And so I definitely thought about it a little bit, and I was very nervous and just didn't execute it how I wanted to. And I think all that goes to nerves. But that's one thing that's kind of helped me with my experiences is the fact that I've gotten to, you know, challenge myself with trying to make the cut in a PGA Tour event. And I've gotten to experience those nerves, and I think that helped me a bunch. As we saw this spring when I made the cut in Puerto Rico.
Which is another thing we want to talk about. You go to Puerto Rico, another PGA Tour event, and this time you made the cut. Do you think what you learned from the RSM helped you with the Puerto Rican Open?
Definitely. I felt much more comfortable that week. It was kind of, to go back before the weekend and started the Monday qualifier, I had a lot of momentum basically from that. Monday qualifier, I shot one over on the front nine and was completely out of it. My manager, Jeremy Elliott, didn't even watch my back nine, so he didn't even know I qualified when I did. But I shot 29 on the back nine, 7 under, and made it in a 4-for-3 playoff. And so after doing that, I kind of proved myself, all right, you know, I'm ready to play. I'm ready to play well this week. And I went in with the intentions of winning the tournament. You know, the Puerto Rico Open's one of those events that kind of goes on at the same time as the Mexico WGC event. So the right. field wasn't quite as strong. So I knew it was a good opportunity for me. And I went in and had a few things happen, fell in the water on a hole. It was kind of a really bizarre week. but anyways, coming down the stretch to make the cut, you know, I was pretty much out of the cut, like, was going to miss the cut with 3 holes to play. And I, you know, I told myself, you got 3 good opportunities here, 3 holes that you can take care of and get to the weekend. And was able to make a really good up and down on 16 and clutched up and made a 15 footer on 17 for birdie and made the 6 footer on the last for birdie, which was huge for me, especially with everything that happened at the RSM. That was kind of a proving point for me, like, all right, you can do it now. So just need more opportunities moving forward.
All right, I'm going to go back a little bit and rewind. You talked about falling in the water. What happened?
So I was 1 under after 3 in the tournament, and the 4th hole, it's like a dogleg left, there's water left, and I pulled my tee shot. It was in the hazard, but it was on like this little island type thing. It was like, the ball was fine, so it was in grass, even though it was in the hazard, but in order for me to get to that island, to get to my ball, I had to cross a couple stones. And so I stepped on the first one, everything was fine, stepped on the second one, was confident I was going to get over all the stones. 3rd stone turns out to be completely slippery, and fell straight down, fell on my knees were bleeding, I was wearing all white pants. White everything, and fell in the water, and the water was probably 3 or 4 feet deep, and so I was pretty much completely drenched, completely soaked. It was early in the morning. My parents weren't out there yet. I didn't have anyone to get me a change of shoes, change of socks, change of pants, or anything. So I played the entire first round completely soaked and with 2 limped knees pretty much all the way in, got done with the round, iced up. I mean, had blood all over the left knee. It was a weird kind of schedule of events there. And then my caddy also fell on that same rock trying to hand me clubs. Those clubs fell in the water. It was a fiasco. We ended up being a half hole behind. My second PGA Tour event, I was playing really well and had so many things going through my mind. I was literally shaking after that hole. I was like, what's going on right now? Like, I was just in complete shock at everything that had just happened. But yeah, I mean, wild week, had good breaks, had bad breaks, but it was another good experience to play on the PGA Tour.
All right, and now what you've got to look forward to is trying to qualify, possibly get some exemptions coming up with the spring and summer, but now you got to go to Monday qualify. And on Monday qualifies, a lot of people don't know, there could be anywhere from 50 to 150 players trying to get just a few spots. You actually have to play some of the best golf you've ever played in 18 holes. It's not 2 or 3 rounds, it's 1 round. round.
Yeah, Monday qualifiers are tough. You can rarely get away with making a mistake. The only reason why I say rarely is because when I qualified for Puerto Rico, I hit it out of bounds on my front nine on a hole, made bogey, made a really good putt for bogey, and was able to battle back and somehow make it in that three or four for three playoff. But yeah, Monday qualifiers are definitely difficult, and a lot of people that have never experienced them don't really understand just how much pressure there is when you get to the first 10. You know, you have to shoot a 65, 64 to make it. So it helps me a lot this season, knowing that I've already kind of gotten through a Monday qualifier, so I have a lot of confidence. I've been playing well, and it's really I'm not too nervous going into Monday qualifiers anymore. Before, I'm like, all right, well, I really need to like press and make birdies here. Instead, now my focus is more on, all right, let's just play golf, focus on what you're good at, play to your strengths. You only have 18 holes, so you got to really make sure you play to your strengths, make sure you manage the course well, and just try to get through it. You know, there's so many players and not enough spots to reward really the amount of talent that's in those Monday qualifier fields. So it's tough, and but the nice thing is I have a lot of confidence from the season Monday already, and I'm just kind of anxious for more opportunities.
Yeah, and on Mondays now in some of the qualifiers on the web.com, you've got guys trying to qualify that have won PGA Tour events, that have won in Europe, that have won in Canada and the other tours. And so does that put more pressure on you, or do you just forget about that and just worry about what you've got to do?
Yeah, you can definitely get caught up in looking at other players, but for me, I'm just the 22-year-old that no one really knows, and I'm just kind of trying to prove myself. And so I don't like to think about any of the other players. You know, it's me versus the golf course for the day. Just kind of focus on my game plan, focus on everything like that. But yeah, as you mentioned, there's a lot of talent in these Monday qualifiers, especially for some of the bigger PGA Tour events, not the invitationals, but, you know, for tournaments such as like the Waste Management in Scottsdale or even the Honda Classic last week. The fields for those Monday qualifiers are very strong. You're going to see major champions in those fields from, you know, 10 years ago. So it's very difficult, and that just shows that these Monday qualifiers aren't something like, oh, you're going to see all these random names kind of pop in. Most of the time it's PGA Tour players that are getting through those Monday qualifiers. It's very rarely that you'll see, you know, a no-namer kind of pop into an event. So it's tough, but, you know, I'm just really gracious and happy to have a lot of opportunities ahead of me.
And you've got Keith Mitchell, and mm-hmm. got to be an inspiration. Here's a guy that, you know, was on the tours coming out of Georgia, played on the mini tours, didn't really have, he had a win, but not on a big tournament. Here he is, wins a PGA Tour. That's got to give you some inspiration to say, hey, I may not be like Keith, mm-hmm. but I can play and I can win.
Yeah, definitely. I think that what Keith did was huge for a lot of guys coming out of school, and just kind of showing how important patience is. You know, he's 26, and a lot of guys come out of school and, you know, they want to get on the PGA Tour the very next year.
Right.
But that's, I mean, basically impossible. You see that maybe once every few years, you know, with the exception of like Jordan Spieth coming out of college, getting a lot of exemptions, and maybe Joaquin Neiman last year when he Mondayed in a few times and then ended up getting sponsor invites. But I think Keith said it well. He said it in an interview. He mentioned how thin the line is between the web.com tour and the PGA Tour, and how you can barely even see the line. And that's very true. There's so much talent out there. And, you know, the key is to have the opportunities that Keith has had. And he's played in, you know, I think, you know, 20, 30, 40 PGA Tour events at this point. So he's been able to kind of, you know, get through the learning curve and, you know, get a lot of experience. And, I mean, I think that's the only thing that's holding me back, the fact that I've only played in a very few events at the highest level. I think if I were able to have a schedule where I could play in, you know, in those events week in and week out, and actually, you know, learn from the previous week and build that as momentum going in the next week, that would help me a lot. I got a web.com exemption the start of this year into the Suncoast Classic, and, you know, I got the phone call very last minute, and I didn't really have a lot of preparation time, and I hadn't played a tournament, gosh, probably, you know, a month and a half before that, other than
right.
one or two Monday qualifiers. So I kind of went in not really knowing exactly how I was going to play. You know, Tiger talks about how, you know, when he comes back from these long stretches, it kind of takes some time to get back in the competitive mode. And so I think that kind of hurt me. But what happened after that event, I was able to Monday and get into Puerto Rico, and I kind of could learn from my previous week
right.
and kind of build from that. And, you know, having a schedule that you know is crucial in this game, because you can, you know, work week in, week out, and you're kind of traveling, and you kind of, you know, get a good feel for and get in a rhythm pretty much. And so, yeah, what Keith did was really awesome, and I'm really happy for him, happy for Sea Island, our whole community, because it kind of shows a lot of us young guys that are kind of just out in the pro ranks that, you know, we can all do it.
We are with Josh Teeter. Josh, assess the last year for you, or for us, sorry.
Yeah, you know, getting back on the tour was great. You know, I had some limited starts coming out of the fall and didn't play well, and then didn't play well on the West Coast either. Missed a bunch of cuts by one shot, and kind of fell back and didn't really have much opportunity in Florida. So I was kind of behind the eight ball, but I felt like I was playing pretty good. My game was close, and I just had to take advantage when I got the opportunity and wasn't able to do that. And then I got the exemption at Colonial, and that was huge. I played nice there, finished 17th, I think. That kind of bumped me up a little bit. And then from then on, I think I've missed one cut the rest of the year. So trending in the right direction. And then, you know, the last three tournaments of the year with a T6, I think a 13th and another T6. You know, it's all coming together, I think so.
Well, as you said, last 3 weeks seems like everything was coming together. What does that do for your confidence going forward?
Yeah, it's great. I mean, you always like to see good golf, and when you're playing well, you feel like you don't, you know, it's going to keep happening, you know. It's going to keep building, and the ball's going to keep rolling, and that's where we're at. You know, this week I've had off. You know, honestly haven't practiced a lot yet this week, just kind of trying to recharge and be at home, and getting back after it. I did some yesterday and today and a little bit tomorrow, but once I get to Columbus Monday, I'll get after it.
And that's the Korn Ferry finals you're going to try and, or starting up the playoffs, and you're going to try and just kind of move up from there to get your card back?
Yeah, correct. So I'm in the 126 to 50 category, which probably give me in the neighborhood of 12 starts, but you know, I'm going to go to these three tournaments and try to win the things and get myself in the players and some other tournaments. So I feel like I'm playing good enough to do it. So let's go give it a shot.
Well, not trying to bring up a negative, but what does it do when you're in the middle of kind of playing well and then you miss a cut? Do you just kind of say, okay, I missed a cut, I just got to get back at it for next week?
Yeah, you know, it's tough. I mean, sometimes you feel like the world's coming to an end because you do feel like you're playing great and you're like, what am I going to do till next Thursday? But other times, you know, when you're confident and you know, like, it's coming, you can be very patient in that time. You know, when I missed the cut in Minneapolis, I wasn't too bent out of shape over it, you know. It was a course where a lot of guys were making birdies, and, you know, I played well the first two-thirds of the first round, and then I kind of had a bad hole, and it just kind of never got it going again. So I knew we'll go to the John Deere the next week and try again. So I think when you're right in it, you sometimes you make more of it than what it really is.
Well, I know when you were up in Greensboro playing in the Wyndham, you had a great Thursday, Friday, and kind of a not so good Saturday, but a great Sunday.
I did, yeah. And honestly, I think that Saturday round, really, even though I shot one over, it kind of may have been one of my better rounds because it really got out of hand on the front nine. I made a couple nice par saves, and I picked my ball up when we weren't playing lift, clean, and place like we had the first two rounds. So I could have been, you know, three or four over at the turn, and, you know, I think I kept it at two over, and then I ended up shooting one over. I could have made a few bogeys on the back. So I kept it in a spot to where if I did have a great day on Sunday like I did, it would mean something. So, you know, I think I was just as proud of that round as I was Sunday's round.
Yeah, it could always be worse, so you just want to make the best of a not necessarily great round.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, one over, you know, around there wasn't a good score by any means, but even on your bad days, you got to figure out a way to shoot a couple under playing around that track. In those conditions.
All right, so you're coming up on the playoffs. What are your game plans for the next season for the PGA Tour?
Yeah, so, I mean, I'll be in the Greenbrier, which is the first event, being top 10 finished last week in Greensboro. So I know I got that on the schedule. And then, you know, I don't know how to work out with the, you know, see how the finals go, or, you know, if I have to play out of this 126 to 50 category, I should be guaranteed maybe two more starts in the fall, being the new Bermuda tournament and then here at the RSM. But we'll see. I mean, we'll just see how, take it as it comes, and not really get too worked up about it and do some Monday qualifying potentially.
How does that fit into your psyche as far as going into next year and thinking you're going to get 12 starts, you think, but you don't necessarily know where, and some of those may be the end of the 2020 season, like this year.
Yeah.
How does that handle in your psyche, just knowing that you've got to play better, but also knowing that you can?
Yeah, I think you really just focus on the tournaments that you know you're going to get in. And be ready to peak at that time. You know, I played out of this category in 2015, and I really didn't know probably what I was getting into. So I played, I think I got in 10 events on my number, and I qualified, well, Monday qualified once. So I played 11 tour events and 11 Corn Ferry events that year. I don't think I'll do that this time. You know, I may, you know, focus more on the PGA Tour and then sprinkle in a couple Corn Ferries to kind of get myself ramped up for when I know that I'm going to play on the big tour, because we all know, you know, you can do a lot more damage out there. You know, one good week out there and can change everything. And, you know, to get into the top 200 to, you know, solidify yourself into the Corn Ferry playoffs for the next year is also something, you know, you can do through a handful to 12 starts, you know.
How proud or happy are you for JT? I mean, what a way to play. No bogeys, four rounds, great win.
Yeah. I mean, that's remarkable. I didn't realize he didn't have a bogey until late Sunday night when I got home. And that's remarkable playing. And I saw he started out birdie the first two yesterday at Northern Trust. So he always hits the ball well. And, I mean, he's a great putter. So when he's on, he's on. And it's great to see. And hopefully he can keep doing it.
Yeah, I saw the Facebook. You put up something like you put up the cover of your truck and said you got room for the trophy if you want to come on.
It was actually his truck, because we were in Greensboro going to rent a car to drive home here to St. Simons, and he had his truck in Greensboro and said, I think I'm just going to have to leave it here. And I said, well, if you don't mind us putting a couple car seats in it and loading it down, we'll drive it home for you. So it worked out. You know, people helping people.
You bet. Today you're going to play pickleball, kind of stretch out a little bit, not necessarily, but don't get hurt.
Oh, no. Yeah, I've been taking my pickleball stuff on the road, trying to, you know, fit in a game or two each week. And, yeah, we're going to go play some here in a little bit.
All right. Well, good luck.
Thanks a lot, Rich.
Hey, folks, this is John Michael Montgomery, and you're listening to the Back Nine Boys Podcast.
We're with Phil Kenyon, who is the director of putting here at Sea Island Golf Performance Center. And Phil, I know you've worked a lot with the Team Europe on the Ryder Cup team, but you've also done a lot of recent work in the last year with Francesco. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so I first worked with Francesco in March last year at Bay Hill. He asked me to have a look. I think he was struggling a little bit at the time, so we got together and tried to iron a few things out.
And it's obviously, it's a work in progress, as it always is. Work on this, we'll get back together. But recently, it's really had more effect and more success.
Yeah, I think, you know, obviously we made quite a lot of changes to start with, and it takes a period of time to bed in, you know, feel comfortable with those changes and then start to own them. And I felt like, you know, towards the end of the summer, you know, technically got a lot more proficient in terms of his ability to start the ball online. And then this year we've been kind of working on some things which are more like refining aspects of what he's doing, like in terms of his speed control. And he's a lot more stable technically, so we're able to kind of work on some other aspects to basically refine what he's doing. So, and I think, you know, so far this year he's putted really well in Bay Hill. Final round, I think he went on record as saying it's the best he's ever putted. So yeah, he just needs to continue that.
I saw you at TPC Sawgrass working behind Justin Rose, and it looked like you were lining him up or trying to see if he was in line before he was practicing on the practice green. What were you looking at? Was that it?
Well, one of the things that like Justin has improved and worked really hard on is his alignment, his aim of the putter. When I first started to work with him, he had a very sort of like, he had a left aim bias, which on left or right puts, he'd aim so high, it would then cause a problem in terms of his start line. So one of the things he's tried to work on a lot. And, you know, I think I've heard him on record as saying that that's one of the things he really feels has contributed to his improved performance, his sniper-like alignment. So we use a laser, and on the putting green, he will practice aligning up to very specific points, and we'll use that laser to confirm the accuracy of that alignment.
Do you find that most pros, most amateurs probably for sure, are aligned wrong at the beginning of their putting stroke?
I see that as a very common pattern where people don't align correctly. And you can get some really good putters that don't align correctly to start with, but have the ability to be able to return the club to where they need to. You know, as a preference, I always prefer good alignment and a stroke that's going to match that. So, you know, with the players I work on, you know, if we are working on alignment, it's because they have a stroke that tends to send the ball exactly where they aim, more or less. So, okay. And then alignment then becomes important for that player.
Tommy Fleetwood, on the verge, every tournament it seems like he's on the verge of just exploding into a big win. You've worked with him a lot. He's just so popular. What are you working with him on?
Well, I've worked with Tommy for a long time, really. So, we there's nothing overly technical that we work on. You know, a lot of his focus more of late has been, you know, on his green reading, speed control, things like that to try and improve. You know, he's fairly good technique, fairly stable in that respect, but just more, you know, about getting in the right mindset in terms of, like, tournament play. And you know, making good reads, functional reads. You know, you could have the best stroke in the world, but if you pick the wrong line to start the ball on, then you know, the ball's not going to go in. So,
true.
I think, you know, green reading is the dark art, as I see it, and it's the one area where I think, like, players have. It's very hard for them to master, and there's a lot of variance in that. I see very often performance breaking down because of green reading before, you know, stroke or other aspects. So, you know, it's one thing that I've been trying to work with Tommy on is to improve his ability in that area.
Do you think he's on the verge of several wins coming up?
Yeah, I mean, you don't know with this game, do you, really, what's around the corner? He's you know, he's working hard, and his goals are, you know, he's got lofty goals. So I know the problem is you've got to be careful how much pressure and expectation you put on yourself. So as lofty as your goals are, you've got to really work out, well, listen, you know, what's got me to where I am? What do I need to do to play well? So I think that's always a reminder for Tommy, is to focus on those processes and not get too wrapped up in what people are saying in terms of, oh, you can win this, you can do this, or even what his own goals are. So, but I think if he plays his own game and he focuses, he works really diligently, you know, he works hard, and he really tries to be a master of his craft. And I think if he keeps that focus, then, you know, good things will happen.
All right, you're going to Augusta. You're going to be working with your players. And what are some of the secrets about playing Augusta National, especially putting?
I think Augusta takes a lot of feel, takes a lot of creativity. It takes a lot of imagination. You know, the average slope is stronger than most courses. So, you know, that, like, the average slope on a PGA Tour event would be 1.5%. At Augusta, it's 2.5%. You've got green speeds that can change daily. So you could be practicing at 12, and then on a Thursday, it's a 14 stimp. So they have the ability to change the speed of the greens overnight with a sub-air system. So
right. All
of a sudden, you've got a bit more slope, faster greens. The amount of break you have to play more is incredible. It really changes the visual. So players who have that ability and imagination, and I think really, really put well there. So you've got to prepare well. So for me, you try and find the biggest break you can find on every green, every hole location, and start to get a sense of how much that ball breaks. And appreciate come Thursday, you get out a third more. So it's a real test of, well, it's a real test of approach putting. It's a real test of iron play. You know, a guy's got to hit in the right spot. And I think your speed control has got to be on point, so that you leave yourself very, you know, as little amount of work as possible. But obviously, your ability to read the green is going to affect your speed. If you pick a really low line, then it's very easy to get that ball running away from you, and you leave yourself 5, 6, 7 foot coming back hill. So good imagination to be able to see the lines, and great touch in then being able to match the speed as well. And just and then being tidy inside 5, 6, 7 foot, you're going to have a lot of putts within that range, second putts, approach, you know, good approach shots, or even like, you know, putts from chips. So they're the kind of demands that the players will face, and that's what you've got to prepare for.
You've been listening to the Back Nine Boys Golf Show with Rich Stiles. Go to back9boys.com for all things golf whenever you want it. We'll be back next week with an all-new Back Nine Boys at back9boys.com.
In Samoa, where rheumatic heart disease kills so many, students from Brigham Young University work with local health teams on prevention, screening, and genetic research. They're helping save the lives of thousands of children and learning firsthand how leadership is defined by service. Because at the heart of it all is how we care for others. Brigham Young University, for the benefit of the world.